I just bought your mom's house and burned it down.
This is episode 70 of the Insert Credit Podcast. I'm Alex Jaffe, and if I were a non-player character, I'd be the villager who breaks immersion by telling you how to format your inventory.
If I were, my name is Tim Rogers, and if I were a non-player character, I'd be the guy who tells you what the name of the town is in all of the Dragon Quest games, because I love that guy.
Very helpful guy, yeah. My name is Frank Cifaldi. If I were a non-player character in a video game, I would be the guy in town running back and forth on a path that makes a joke about how he can't stop walking back and forth.
Oh no, those guys!
So you're the working designs character, because I was almost going to take that guy.
Well, I mean, you could be a different one.
They're all basically the same. They're like, hey, guess what? We're self-referential. Okay, I'm Brandon Sheffield, and if I were an NPC, I would be the gruff merchant whose place later gets destroyed and is then thankful for your help.
Oh, that's a good NPC.
There's actually a character in the first Suikoden game, right? There's like a little kid that you can, when you recruit him, he becomes the guy who stands out in front of your castle and tells people what the name of the castle is, which
is really awesome. Cool.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Great. There's an equivalent in Suikoden 2 as well. So,
Suikoden?
I like that a lot. Yeah, Suikoden. I want to play Suikoden 2 again. What the heck, man? Why can't they put that on something? The end.
That's for the people end. Who are just tuning into the show on episode 70, what I do on this show is I come up with the question and I ask you guys that question. And you have 6 minutes to address that question.
That's right.
I ask another question, and we keep doing that for a while, and then
until we die.
Yes, until we die. And let us begin the long and infinite process with this question.
All right, I'll hear it.
A weird plague sweeps the planet, killing only people involved in the video game industry.
Heck yeah.
You manage to cobble enough antidote together to save you and your friends, and also 5 personalities of your choice. Oh. Which game biz folks do you take with you to the future?
Now, how are we defining a friend?
Shigeru Miyamoto.
People within your personal social circle are safe.
Okay, so
Miyamoto and Hideo Kojima are my friends, but I don't mind if Kojima dies.
So if they're like game developer personalities and like we kind of hang out sometimes, we know each other by name, like they're covered.
Yeah, let's say your neighborhood in Oakland is safe.
Oh, that's different.
Well,
that's
you said friends, said. Though. I'm talking about like friends in the video game industry who aren't necessarily in Oakland.
Yeah. Like here's the problem, Jeffy. I'm friends with Swery.
Yeah.
So is Swery safe?
Yeah. Is Swery safe?
Do you consider yourself like close personal friends with Swery, or just like a celebrity you know?
I actually said this to...
Do you know any secrets about Swery?
I do know secrets about Swery.
There you go.
Yeah.
And B, anytime he is in an area that he thinks I will be, he sends me a direct message and says, hey, I don't want to hang out with my coworkers. Are you around? Let's hang out.
Yeah.
Okay, in that case, Swery is safe.
Okay, all so right. I had a conversation
with Swery about eyeglasses, in which we both... discovered we own eyeglasses that are from the same brand. So does that make him my friend?
No.
Well, I've already saved him anyway, so.
Yeah.
What?
And like, even if Brandon was on...
Oh, that's good.
Like, I think the combined me and Brandon would save Swery for sure.
Yeah. So, all right.
Swery's okay, so I guess we could just move on.
Shigeru Miyamoto's my friend, so... me and him hang out whenever.
Do you know secrets about Shigeru Miyamoto? Whenever
he's in town, I know how many times he jerked off yesterday, etc. I know a whole bunch of stuff about him. All he ever does is just email me. No, I would say I would save Shigeru Miyamoto if I
Absolutely.
Had to save somebody.
Absolutely.
I would save him, but not some of the other business people at Nintendo who tell him he's got to be a producer. So I would save Shigeru Miyamoto and hire him at Action Button Entertainment.
Well, would you save Tezuka also?
Yes.
They're
yes,
Takashi
Tezuka got to be saved as well. So those two, I would hire them at Action Button to work on a new game.
Yeah.
Just to make something new. That's two. I would say those two guys, because they're both, neither of them are allowed to do anything outside of business administration and business development and whatever crap. I would like to see them just make a game.
They've probably got another good, like, two or three games in them.
Yeah, and they're probably really good ones, too.
Yeah, so that's good.
I kind of want to save Vlambeer somehow.
Those guys?
Yeah, because I want, I don't know.
We've only got three individuals left. Choose wisely.
I feel like they're really good competition for, because, you know, you're going to have Miyamoto, and he's just going to recruit a whole bunch of dudes, and he's going to make Nintendo games. But I don't feel like that's the kind of person that I'm going to compete with. With my games. I feel like Vlambeer is more the kind of people that I'm going to compete with. So...
But, I mean
you're also
competing with, like, Cappy, and they're safe because they're our friends.
Yes, they're safe.
So, yeah, like, right. I mean, not, okay. I'm not saying
yeah,
they're...
I forgot about my friends being saved, or... I think
your friends are saved rule is a terrible rule. I think we shouldn't let our friends be saved, just us three.
I just want you guys to be happy in the future.
I don't want to be happy.
But I don't want Nathan Vella to die.
But he's got to, unless you choose to save him.
Guys, right, I'm just trying to make the bleak future a little bit brighter.
Okay. So it's a lot harder if our friends are not saved.
Yeah, because at that point I'm not saving for the sake of video games. I'm saving to save my friends.
Well, yeah, then I'll just save my friends. So we got to go
with the original rule.
Yeah, that's the real secret, not funny reason I did that.
Yeah.
That's boring.
It is boring. It's boring, but it's true.
Do we think Yu Suzuki has anything left in him?
No.
I'm not sure he does.
He's I wouldn't even say he's in the industry, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
he's probably fine. Yeah.
Here's a weird one. What about saving Mark Cerny? I don't know if he's going to make video games better, but he might make video games in general better.
Yeah.
He's not going to make us the next Mario that is going to blow our brains out, but he might just make all the other games better.
The next Mario that murders us by blowing our brains out.
I want my brains blown out.
By Mario, by a fat Italian plumber.
Yeah, so,
I like Mark Cerny you know what? Along those lines, Will Wright. Like, I still want that brain in games.
You know, I don't think I care about what he wants to make, though.
I wouldn't even say he's in the industry right now either. I mean, what is he doing?
Yeah, that's true.
Stupid Fun Happy Place Club time.
Stupid Fun Club? Is he, like, he founded Stupid Fun Club when? Like, 2008? Yeah. And they've made...
It was earlier than that, I think. 2006?
Yeah, like, and they've made nothing? No, I think it was 2007.
Yeah, it was
That's when Spore came out, right?
Okay. They did some kind
of... Why do I know this?
Guys, you have 2 minutes left to decide, otherwise the remaining three cures go to waste.
I still want to see things come out of Will Wright's brain, even though I don't want to play. I'm kind of similar to Mark Cerny, so I want to vote for Will Wright.
Hmm. Will Wright, guys?
I think Shigeru Miyamoto and Takashi Tezuka.
Those are the only two I really care about, yeah.
Yeah, and so with Cerny, that would be three.
Yep. It's four. One more, guys.
Wait, we need...
Clifford Blazinski.
We need a really good programmer guy, I think.
There's a lot of those.
There's programmers in the technology industry.
You could poach those from other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. What about, like...
No, you want to say Carmack? Is that what you're getting at?
I was thinking of Tim Sweeney.
Oh, yeah.
He's got that Unreal Engine, yeah.
He could build us some engines that we'd make things with.
I'm good with Unreal Tim Engine Sweeney 5. If you guys want to just call it.
If he would make Unreal Engine 5 and then we could have Super Mario 65 in Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah.
On a PlayStation 5 by Mark Cerny.
By Mark Cerny, yeah.
Yeah, right. more like Funreal Engine.
And Will Wright will play it.
Yeah, Will Wright will be the level designer.
So we've got Shiggy, Takash, Cerny, Will, and Sweeney.
I'm good with that.
So. All right.
I think Cerny and Sweeney should start a company called Cerny and Sweeney, or Swerny.
Yeah, Swerny.
Swery can work for them.
Get your Swerny on.
Swery can work for Swerny.
Guys, I have good news. I've already released the plague, and it is now only a matter of time.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay, next time
we can start that company.
Woo! Yeah.
Swerny Entertainment.
Have there been video game sequels which have surpassed their predecessors in quality on a lower budget?
Oh,
that's an interesting question.
Hmm.
Because that's why I asked it, Tim.
Sequels that surpassed the original in quality, I dare say that is for the first couple years of big video games, which arguably starting with the NES, that was
the
standard.
Rule.
Yeah, the sequel was always better.
Yeah. But it was always bigger budget.
Right.
Yeah, there was always
we kind of need to know the budgets of these things, which is hard to know.
I'm very few like sequels that are lower budget are even coming to mind. Like, I don't know, like the Way Forward Blood Rain game was probably cheaper than other ones.
If games that switch developer can
that's a sequel, yeah.
Yeah, the original form of this question was game sequels on lower budgets, but I didn't want to talk about Way Forward the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, WF, yeah. You don't want to talk about those guys that much at all.
Yeah.
More like Way Backward, right?
Yeah!
It's a pretty significantly more like that.
Yeah, it's about 99% more like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, get back in the barn, boys, is what I would say to them. Get back in the barn and lock the door.
Way Forward.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's right.
So, games with lower budgets.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if Day of the Tentacle came in under Maniac Mansion's budget, because Maniac Mansion had 2 years of engine development.
Is that a sequel?
Yep.
Yeah, it's called Maniac Mansion 2, Day of the Tentacle.
Did not know that.
Yeah, it is. It is a sequel. I think this is difficult to articulate, but I think that Final Fantasy XII cost less money than Final Fantasy X. And I think that Final Fantasy XII is better than Final Fantasy X. Also, Final Fantasy X definitely cost less money than Final Fantasy VII. Final Fantasy VII cost a huge amount of money. They spent tens of millions of dollars on it.
Also, I would say that Final Fantasy XII probably costs less than Final Fantasy XI.
Yes, that is true as well, and it probably costs more than Final Fantasy VII.
Yep.
Final Fantasy VII's budget was $50 million, $60 million, something like that. It was a really big budget for a video game. So, there you go.
Shenmue 2 was cheaper than Shenmue 1.
Yeah, that is true as well, and I was about to say that the Ryuga Gotoku, as it is in Superior Nihongo, the Yakuza games are sort of a spiritual sequel to the Shenmue games, because they're picking up on the same little environment with a lot of nooks and crannies in it kind of thing. And they are of, like, much, much just astronomically lower budget. And I think they're better games because they're more more gamey. They're more together, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Also more like Crooks and Nannies.
Yeah, Crooks. Yabba dabba doozer. So yeah, those Final Fantasies I think are a really good example. And then I guess Final Fantasy 13 cost a whole bunch of money and was worse than the ones before it.
I kind of wonder if things like, you know, Fallout New Vegas cost less than Fallout 3, because Fallout 3 was a big leap.
It was a different developer
as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a great example. I find New Vegas significantly better as a game than 3.
I wonder if Skyrim cost less than Oblivion, and I don't like either of them, but Skyrim is a lot better than Oblivion.
How do you think the numbers break down on the first 6 Mega Man games for the NES? Because they're all basically using the same assets, I imagine.
The
engine built.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were just churning them like butter.
Right.
Yeah.
Once they built the churn and they poured in the milk.
But they didn't exactly surpass. They didn't do a whole lot of surpassing in that.
They did. Yeah, I think Mega Man 4 and 5 are real good, and Mega Man 6 is real good.
But they don't significantly surpass 2 and 3.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're holding them up to a holistic design standard. Oh, Majora's Mask, bam, cost less money than Ocarina of Time.
There you go.
There you go. Perfect. That's definitely, there you go. That had to have cost less money because it's just a whole bunch of reused crap.
You know, and, that's how we got to think, I think, is reused stuff for, like, same engine sequels, because that's where the gold is here.
Oh, Grand Theft Auto Vice City?
Yeah.
I think that was lower budget, but they did have Ray Liotta as the main character in that game.
I've heard that Mario Galaxy 2 is better than 1. I haven't played
Mario Galaxy 2 is astronomically better than Mario Galaxy 1.
Okay. And that was probably cheaper.
Is Super Mario Brothers: The Lost Levels better than Super Mario Brothers?
No.
I've heard the argument.
No. I've heard the argument as well, and I'd be willing to talk about it in detail later. But here's one, and maybe this doesn't count, but I think that the new Zelda on 3DS, which I still haven't played, I have it shrink-wrapped behind my keyboard so that I have to look at it all day while I'm working, which is terrible. It's a really bad idea. I think that that's probably better than Skyward Sword, the most recent big Zelda game, and it probably cost a fraction of the budget.
Is it a sequel to Skyward Sword?
It's a sequel to Zelda.
Yeah, but it's also I don't know. I would only count the portable ones if you're doing that. Like, I think they probably budget portable different than home.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But it's getting, I don't know. I don't know. It's
the lines are blurring. I agree.
Link's Awakening was a sequel to A Link to the Past.
Especially back then, I think the Portal games had a lower budget just no matter what.
They did have a lower budget. Now, actually, this Link Between Worlds in Japan is just called Zelda Link to the Past 2.
Nice. That's kind of hot.
Or
yeah.
Kamigami no Triforce 2 in the Superior Nihongo.
It's superior indeed.
Kamigami no Triforce. Oh, also, I have these two games on my shelf here. Secret of Mana and Secret of Evermore, and I know they're not sequels, but I think Secret of Evermore cost less money. And I mean, I can tell by them using the same font on the box that they're trying to make you think that it's a sequel. And I mean, the art is similar. We've got a character in the foreground looking at an object in the background. I think they're trying to make you think it's a sequel. And I would say that it's a superior game, and it probably costs a lot less money.
If we're counting 7, 10, and 12 as sequels, then I think we can count the Secrets of as sequels.
Secrets of. Yeah.
I'm going to go every iteration of Street Fighter 2.
Mmm.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like, at least Champion was cheaper than 2, I'm sure. And Turbo was cheaper than Champion, I'm sure.
Oh, man, Turbo is always cheaper than Champion. This is so fast.
Super might have been more than, like, Champion. I don't know.
Super was a completely redone art. And,
yeah, Super was expensive.
New characters.
Super was probably more expensive than 2, honestly.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. I think so. I think
okay,
Super
so,
was.
So I'm going to say Champion.
But Super
and
Turbo Grandmaster Challenge is not cheaper than Super.
How about Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 versus Mortal Kombat 3?
Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 is much better. Man, I think Mortal Kombat 3 was probably lower budget than Mortal Kombat 2.
Yeah.
because they just had their method worked out.
Yeah.
Because they're just filming guys in front of a blue screen. They didn't even know to make the screen green back then. That's amazing.
I hadn't gotten that part yet.
So, yeah. I think Majora's Mask is my definitive answer. And it's just a case of the game design being more ingenious. I think even if you don't like a Zelda game, you can look at the game design of that and be like, hey, that's neat.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a pretty great answer. Let's move on.
Okay.
Here's a challenge topic that I haven't done in a while. So here's one of those right now.
Oh, GDC. Okay.
Design a video game to be played for 24 hours straight without stopping.
Oh, man, it's real time, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's 24, the video game.
Mm-hmm.
Starring Kiefer Sutherland. Or Keither Sutherland.
Right.
That was a good joke. Keither Sutherland.
Keith or Sutherland.
Keith or Sufferland.
Yeah.
Okay. That could be cool, but I mean, like, the real time thing is intriguing. I think I would split it into 4-hour chunks as opposed to one 24-hour game. So, like, you're playing the same 4 hours over and over again. So it's more of a Groundhog Day thing than 24.
And you get 6 chances?
Yeah.
Groundhog 24, is that what it's called?
Groundhog 24.
Groundhog Auto?
Groundhog 24 Auto.
Groundhog Auto.
That's as far as my brain's gone. But I'm much more intrigued by playing the same solid 4 hours from 6 different Rashomon perspectives than I am by one 24-hour narrative.
Yeah, I'd like that one, too.
Yeah.
I would say, why not make it 12 Angry Men, the video game, and you live the same 2 hours from every...
Yeah, I like that.
Every one of the 12 jurors.
Yeah.
How's that? So it's basically...
I mean, you don't want it to literally be in, like juror's room. I mean, that's, you don't want it to actually be 12 Angry Men. But like,
what if it was like 12 Angry? What if it was like 12 Angry Men meets Psychonauts, where you go into each of the jurors' heads and convince them using kind of like visual metaphors? What's
yeah, that's, well, that? I mean, that sounds cool, but that kind of loses the whole like playing the same scenario from different perspectives thing, because it's more just getting in someone's head, and like, rather than like what you're suggesting is, rather than experiencing life as them, you're going in and affecting them.
Fair enough.
So I think that seems different.
I wouldn't mind there just being a game that was I mean, I always have this idea when I'm thinking about social games, or I'm seeing a social game on Facebook that people are playing, I like the idea of a game that you just kind of check in with every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be cool to design a social game, like a Facebook-style Facebook game that messages you, you know, and tells you when something has changed or when something is ready, right? And it's like a 24-hour narrative, and it's just like one day of a game. You know, or it's like guaranteed from the start to have like a story arc and an ending, but like use the social game design metaphors and styles and templates to tell an actual story in a game. I don't know why somebody doesn't do that. So it wouldn't necessarily be a sit and stare at it for 24 hours game, but it's like,
yeah,
it's just kind of dosing out the story to you.
Dosing. What are you doing between just living your life?
Yeah, just living your life. It augments your life. Okay. Maybe you're getting friendly letters from a character who's...
That sounds cool, but I think I'd like... There are those people who will like slow down a Beethoven symphony to be just like horrifically slow that like lasts 24 hours, and they sort of like lay there and listen to it and have this weird spiritual experience.
Did you know, Frank, that there is a church in Germany that is playing John Cage's composition as slow as possible, at a speed so slow that it will take 639 years to complete, and it started in 2001?
I didn't know that. It's really cool.
One of my plans is to go there and hang out in that church someday.
Until it's over.
Me and Brent Porter were talking about, until the end, about how you could time it to get there during a chord change. Should the chords change every couple months?
Yeah.
I think that would be cool.
That would be cool. But like, the point is that like people do that like in a 24-hour stretch, I think, and sort of come away with having this like spiritual experience. So I think I want something that actually makes you shut the rest of the world off and experience it for 24 hours, because you're never going to replay it.
So first of all, the game has to be good, right?
Of course.
It has to be a pretty good game. Second of all, I've played some games for 24 straight hours. Like, have you ever played a game for 24 straight hours, Frank? Because I know I have. Really? I've played Valkyria Chronicles on the PlayStation 3 for, like, well over 30 straight hours. Me and
my record's like nine.
I played that one, nine hours. Wow. I don't know. I definitely played for like 24 straight hours. It was cool. I played through that Walking Dead game pretty fast. I liked that. I think that our 24-hour game would have to be like a real-time Walking Dead-style adventure game, and it just has to be good, you know? And it's 24 hours, and it's in real-time, and you've got to make these real-time decisions. And then you shoehorn in some kind of spiritual experience. You get the action out of there. You know, you don't have to shoot or kill anything. You're just kind of looking around at some stuff. And I mean, there's
How
games
would you
like,
deal with death and consequences and stuff?
Oh, well, you just wouldn't. I mean, there wouldn't be death. There would be consequences, but not death. And there would be multiple story threads, as many as possible without having to record a whole bunch of audio. I mean, I'm thinking games like Disaster Report and Raw Danger would be the right... I know you can die in those games, but that's the right kind of template for a story like this.
All right. Man. Let's move on.
What?
Yes, we are finished. Complete this sentence. There are two kinds of people who play video games, blank and blank.
Whoa, people who like Mario and people who, for some reason, prefer Bonk.
That's right.
So there are two people who play video games, everyone in Brandon.
Hey, you know, I think there's some other people out there.
Somebody tried to tell me a couple weeks ago, somebody tried to tell me that there's nothing good about Mario that is not in every other platformer. And it's like, what? I didn't think that type of person existed. There's definitely some good stuff about Mario, period. The end.
Yeah, Mario's okay. So there are two kinds of people. People that think there's good stuff about Mario and people what don't.
Yeah, and then that
it's,
one
It's
that
really
one
easy to make a bunch of these.
Yeah.
You can just make a whole bunch of these binaries because there are also two kinds of people. Yeah. People that love the Valis series and people that don't.
I could write a mathematical proof for how the existence of this whole trope of there are two types of people in the world, people who blank and people who blank, the existence of that in itself mathematically proves that there are more than two types of people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By the way, I'll do that later if anybody wants me to. But
I think
yeah,
it's okay.
I don't think anyone really wants you to.
I need an infographic if you do.
It would be. Oh, well, there would definitely be like four or five of those because that's how you prove.
Speaking of those kinds of tropes, I was recently enjoying someone's dislike of the trope of, you know, 20 things to do before you die and 20 places to see before you die. And it's like, what are these things that you're planning to do after you die that you need to be so specific about doing them before that?
Did you see that Tumblr that I linked? I guess you saw that Tumblr I linked you to. There's one that's
I had seen
900 animal birthdays to visit before you die.
The thing is that after you die, you're going to be a ghost, and ghosts don't have thumbs, so they can't play video games. So you got to play a certain amount of video games before you die, or else you're not going to get the chance again.
In fact, you don't know what's under those sheets, apparently.
Ghost thumbs. So two types of people who play video games.
Those who admit it and those who don't.
People who like Sonic and people who like Mario.
Everyone likes one and not the other.
No, you've got to choose. It's like Elvis or the Beatles, according to Uma Thurman in the outtakes from the film Pulp Fiction. You have to choose Elvis or the Beatles. You can like both of them, but you have to like one more. Sonic and Mario.
The actual one is this isn't what she says, but I think the actual argument is Beatles and Stones. I think they got that one wrong.
Oh no, yeah, that's
oh
easy.
you think that's no, the actual
of course
argument?
It's easy
because the Rolling Stones suck balls and
Correct.
The Beatles are pretty good.
And the Rolling Stones are some goddarn cartoon music. Yep. Let's not talk about that. it's like sometimes you'll just like be watching a Martin Scorsese movie and then a Rolling Stones song just kind of like poops itself on top of the movie and it's just steaming there and it's like, oh, there's that song. You know, I guess that song's in there. And it's like, I can sort of understand why you would like that, but I don't like it that you would. You know? Anyway, so that I think you're right, Frank, that Beatles versus Rolling Stones is the real thing, but Uma Thurman in the outtakes of the movie Pulp Fiction does say Elvis or the Beatles.
So is Mario versus Sonic the Beatles versus Stones equivalent?
Is it the Elvis versus Beatles? Who's the Elvis and who's the Beatles?
Oh, Mario's definitely Elvis in this scenario.
Do you think so?
Yeah, because Sonic is the more... No, Sonic is the more, like, disruptive one that tried to, like, change stuff to be looser.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, he's more pop-songy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would rather we use superior Nihongo bands to this binary, though.
That's not going to work.
You always do the jazz versus classical thing, and Mario is definitely classical to Sonic's jazz.
Yeah.
More so,
anyway, there are two types of people in the world. People who like Dragon Quest and people who like Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
That's right. There are two types of people in the world. People who like Street Fighter and people who like King of Fighters.
Mm. Oh, King of Street Fighters would like kind of unite them all if they had King of Street Fighters. That's what they should call Capcom versus SNK.
Yeah. That's a missed opportunity, guys.
Yeah. King of Street Fighters. Mm-hmm. There are two types of people, to video gamers, those who like Street Fighter and those who like Fighters History Dynamite.
I like that game, but I like both of them.
Yeah, but you got to choose one.
Oh, well, I'm going to choose Street Fighter.
Wow.
Well, according to the internet, there are two types of people who play video games, those who buy one console and those who buy a different console.
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely true.
There's more than two consoles.
No, there's
three of them. There's three now.
There's only two.
There's PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and Wii U, and they're all black rectangles. Except the PlayStation 4, which is kind of sideways.
Hmm.
Kind of parallel.
Rectangles can be sideways. I don't know if you knew that.
You can put them up sideways, but then that's dangerous.
Rectangles are sideways food.
I like rectangles.
Rectangles, Ralph.
Rectangles.
I think one more binary.
Okay.
No.
There are two types of people. Two types of people in the world. There are those that like video ball and those that like gun sport.
Oh. Nope. Pick a side.
No, it's only video ball. There are two types of people in the world: those who like video ball and those who haven't played video ball.
Ooh. Honk, honk, honk.
All right,
actually, I think people will like both of our games, possibly.
Let's help our listeners out.
Okay.
As children around the world will be getting their new generation consoles in a few short weeks for Christmas, give our listeners some creative but home-safe insults to sling back at them on live multiplayer games.
Oh!
You are not very good at this video game.
Clank.
One thing I've employed is try a different language than the one that they're speaking.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Insult them in Spanish. Why not?
Try Russian.
Yeah.
That might get you booted from Xbox Live.
Actually, just say whatever you're gonna say, but say it in a British accent, and you'll be way more clever.
Oi there, babe. Oh, I've been
that. They'll be like, whoa. I was just owned somehow.
I just got owned by a child.
When I was playing Halo 3 with my friend Chris Ford, who is the guy that wrote a movie called Robot and Frank.
That movie's on Netflix now, as of last week, by the way.
Oh, is it? You gotta watch it. It's pretty good.
It popped in the new releases section last week.
What's that movie? And also this movie called Clown that's coming out real soon. But anyway, we were playing the Halo 3, and there were these Mexican dudes that we were playing against. And I know they were Mexican because they were speaking Mexican Spanish. And they were just stupidly good at this game. It was 5-on-5, and we were playing the Capture the Flag thing. And at any given time, when we would be at one of their nodes we were supposed to control, there would be two of them there. Like, everywhere, always. But there are only five of them, and there are six nodes, and it was impossible that there would always be two of them, but there were. So, wait, before this, speaking of the British accent thing, we were playing against some British teams, and so Ford was saying, "When I grow up, I never want to grow up. I want to be a boy and play forever." And they were like, you start off with your bollocks! And because they had these really high voices because they were 12 and they were just these little kids. And so then later...
Oh, those playing, kids, yeah.
Yeah. Then later when we were playing with the Mexican dude, he kept with his British accent when he was trash-talking them, but then he started trying to do it in Spanish and he was like, chinga tu madre! And
it was... Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And then one of them came in and he was like, "Fuck your mother!" it all came, and everybody was laughing and everyone was actually having a good time. And I was like, "Man, this insult stuff is really not so bad actually on here."
It's actually people talk about the insults online. It's not actually that bad. Sometimes you have some fun with it as long as you don't say any genuinely terrifying, hateful things.
Yeah, that one. So that one was fun, but
same
then
weird stuff.
Immediately after the fun times, these dudes came in that were even more 12 than the guys before, and they 12-er. Were just like racial epithets and you know, gay stuff. And, like, everybody's a faggot now, and I was like, oh, gay there stuff. It is, and then we turned it off.
Yeah, they always bring out the gay stuff. I got called a very racial word the first time I ever played an Xbox Live game online. Within 3 seconds, I got somebody shot me and then called me a race word. And I was like, oh, okay.
What? Like a marathon runner?
Yeah, they called me a marathon runner.
It called you a sprinter?
100-meter dasher.
Nice 100-meter dash, jerk.
Yeah, so that's a good thing to do, racism, where you're just, be a racist and, like, shoot people and say, call them 100-meter dasher, or a 50-meter dasher.
Indy 500.
Take that, hurdler. There you go. Shoot somebody and be like, take that, hurdler.
You know what? It'd be cool to look up, like, antiquated insults that no one actually says anymore that are,
you
like...
You scallywag?
Like scallion?
Yeah, like go Mr. Burns on him, you know? Like, that would be fun.
I think we have a really good time in video ball. One thing that I've instructed my video ball players to do in public is to ignore and not use any common esports terminology, right? To intentionally ignore and not use that stuff, to understand it and avoid it so that we can make our own language. And I think we've been having a really good time with that. We've been saying stuff like, I just bought your mom's house and burned it down. It's like, what does that even mean? It means that you possessed a geometrical angle that was irrefutable at the point that you took your shot. So you owned the real estate of the whole side of the field that you were shooting at. Like, little things like that. We've had a good time just making stuff up. So I would say, know what people say and just try to say new stuff. Have some fun with words. Why doesn't anybody want to have any fun with words anymore? The end.
I agree
with
that.
That's what I say. Mm. Have a whole bunch of fun with it.
Yeah. Why just have words with friends? Have words with enemies as well.
Yeah, have words with fun. Have fun with friends and fun with words and words with fun.
Here's a question from listener All Monsters.
Hey, what's up, All Monsters?
He said, All Monsters asks, or maybe All Monsters ask, you're going out for lunch with a girl, and she wants to eat at a restaurant from a video game. Where do you take her?
What a noob.
So wait a minute. By a girl, is he implying that I am, like, in a romantic involvement with this girl? Because that immediately makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Or is this, like, someone I'm meeting for the first time? This is important.
Yeah. What's the rules?
These are all the details All Monsters provided.
Well, you are the host, so you got to make a call.
I'm going to say that it's a potentially romantic situation. Let's see how it goes.
So let's say, first time meeting, right?
I'm going to lay down the rules. Let's say this is like the second time you're meeting her. Because that's like when you go to a more... Because the first time you meet somebody, you're going to take them to like a coffee shop, and you're not going to be like... She's not going to ask you, can you think of a place that's like this the first
on
time,
the
right?
On the first date, she says, hey, did you hear about that vortex to the video game world that opened up? I'd like to go to a restaurant from a video game next time.
And so then you go home, and you jerk off about halfway, and then you stop, and you go, going to think of a restaurant for the next time, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then you go to bed. You slap yourself in the face until you fall asleep.
Yep.
And then,
as we all do.
And then when you wake up, you have a basic idea of where you want to go.
I see. So you're back on OkCupid.
Right, like humans.
Yeah.
Yes. So what's the restaurant?
Oh boy.
Does it have to be a specific restaurant from a video game, or does it just have to be a video game that we think would have a cool restaurant to eat at? Because I think the latter is.
I think by his rules, by All Monsters' rules, it is a specific restaurant. That's how I read it or heard it. That's how I inferred it.
I like the idea of what video game would just have cool restaurants in it.
That's a much better question. I agree.
In the desert town of, I think it's Bledovik, or however it's pronounced, in Xenogears, there's a restaurant you can go sit down in that it's like up an alleyway and up some stairs and like around a corner, and you go in and you can sit in the restaurant and order food. And there's like a fish aquarium in the restaurant. You can rotate the camera, and there's like a whole bunch of people in there. And it's one of the biggest, most lived-in looking towns that I've ever seen in a video game. And it's neat that there's a restaurant you can sit in and order food, and your characters sit there eating. Also, in the game Grandia, you eat at a lot of restaurants. There's always the dinner scene. Like when you arrive in a new town, your characters all want to go to the inn right away, and there's a dinner scene where you talk to the characters. So I would go somewhere in Grandia, I think, because all those restaurants are so colorful and weird looking, and I just wanted to hang out there.
It's a date. Like, I want to find a restaurant that has an outside seating in a really interesting town. So, like, I can't think of many. Like, I've seen some really pretty screenshots of, like, Final Fantasy IX places. Maybe somewhere there.
Yeah, Final Fantasy IX has a whole bunch of neat places.
Yeah.
It's big on towns as well.
Right.
Big on towns.
That's where my mind's going, then, is more scenery than, like, assuming the food's going to be good.
See, because I don't want to say, like, a boring thing, like, Shenmue has some places to eat noodles or whatever. It's like, yeah, it's like, just go to Japan or China. That's like, you know, if there was a portal to a video game world, I'm sure it could drop you off in China or whatever. But
people chose Shenmue, it'd be like, really?
I like the kitchen in the giant castle in Blue Dragon. Does that count? Can I eat at the kitchen? Can I eat at the banquet hall of the Blue Dragon big castle in like the first big castle town?
Can I eat at the dining hall in a Harry Potter game?
Yes.
No muggles allowed, no. Frank.
Oh, yeah, see, you're muggles.
It's true.
You're goddamn muggles. Muggles before juggles, as they say.
Because, like, any girl I've ever dated has liked Harry Potter, pretty much. So.
Oh,
yeah,
good old,
that's a safe bet.
You know what I have to say? That's your problem, Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only hang out with girls who prefer the Hunger Games.
There are two types of girls. Girls who like the Hunger Games and girls who like Harry Potter.
I did, in fact, stop watching the Harry Potter films because I was not dating anyone at the time that the last one came out.
Yep.
Oh, STBU.
I guess I don't have to see this one.
So you don't know what happens at the end of the Harry Potter series?
No, and I was actually, you know, I enjoyed it, but it just, I didn't care enough to go out
One of these days, snip it off. Check out the final episode.
You know, if it were on the Netflix, maybe I'd do it.
My final answer, the restaurant I would take a girl to from a video game, is the Enertron from Chrono Trigger, where you go in from the year 2300 AD, where you enter the machine and you're rejuvenated but still hungry. That's where I would take her, because that is the perfect indicator of where the relationship is going to go.
All right.
That's my final answer.
Perfect. Brandon, any closing thoughts?
I would take them to the kitchen from Bonk's Revenge. It's on a ship.
Boat kitchen.
Fat, funny cooks walking around.
Yeah.
Pretty entertaining. I think we'd have a lot to talk about in there. That's my
answer. You wouldn't be able to eat, though. Because it's pretty sure they
No,
make
no, meat. They have fruit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, heck of
they got melons. They got grapes.
Okay.
All right. We are now debuting what may be a regular segment. I'm calling this Custom Soundtrack.
Oh, CST.
Yes. Yeah. As opposed to OST. This is an unoriginal soundtrack. That could be another name for this, USD. So what this is I give you a video game, and you take out all the music, and you put in licensed music by actual musical artists which fit the mood of the game, maybe injecting particular pieces into particular parts as you see fit. You can be as detailed as you like.
Okay.
The first game we're doing this with is Gears of War.
Oh, baby.
Gears of War? Well, it should all be corn. Just corn.
No! So we're trying to make the game cool with the music, right?
Oh, yes. I get it.
Because Gears of War's got some kind of grody music. Yeah. I would want to get some of the tracks from the original Quake soundtrack on there. Just the blown out Trent Reznor weird guitars and stuff that he did for that. But that's a joke. I would put some Boris in Gears of War. I would put some of the harder Boris songs.
Gears of Boris.
I'm on board with Boris. And you know, I would actually like to have some Gamelon music in there, like when the locusts show up to kind of emphasize their otherworldliness, because Gamelon is like some of the stranger music that you will hear, and I mean, it comes from Earth, of course, but who knows? Maybe aliens.
Yeah, it's probably what alien music sounds like.
Yeah.
I also like, okay, well, I think that to me, this band Medusa from Bloomington, Indiana, which is where I went to college, which is totally coincidental, this band Medusa kind of sounds like the musical equivalent of what the game Gears of War is good at to me, which is...
You know, I really, when I hear too many guitars and kind of metal music things in video game soundtracks, I actually start to tune out, and I like metal a lot. So.
Yeah, except Medusa's metal, that's all, it's like all power chords, no solos, really simple riffs, 2-minute songs that you could kind of work into some loops, minimal vocals, and it's just these really good chugging, kind of catchy, almost 8-bit Nintendo cat level of catchiness guitar riffs that are really simple. And I wouldn't mind playing a shooting game that had music like that, especially because Gears of War is so like compact and straightforward in the type of game it is. It's like there's those guys and they're over there and they're hiding, so you can't get them, so go over there. And it's like it's just good kind of thinking music. I mean, I listen to it while working, so it's like I feel like that could work. Comets on Fire. I'd listen to Comets on Fire.
I would put Vaz in there as well if we're going this direction. That's it, they're kind of Comets on Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Contemporaries, but yeah. I would do that. Maybe instead of the Gamelon music, since we're clearly making a guitar album, put Lightning Bolt in there for those guys.
Yeah, there's a couple of Lightning Bolt tracks that would work pretty well for weird stuff, and there's a couple of Lightning Bolt tracks that would work for you're just kind of chugging around shooting.
Yeah.
If only Lightning Bolt would score a video game that was like designed around Lightning Bolt's music, that would be really cool.
It would be really cool.
Yeah.
We should make that happen someday.
Yeah. I wonder if I've already started talking to them about it. That would be cool.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, also
I probably haven't.
No.
But but
the slower kind of, there aren't that many, but there's like right when you start out and you're in the prison and it's kind of slow and weird, I would play some Leviathan. I like
Leviathan.
Yeah. Just some kind of like murmury weird.
What would you guys play for the final encounter with General Rom on the speeding train?
The Cheers theme song.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Cheers.
Yeah.
Cheers is really
yes.
good.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, I was wondering what we should play for the dumb joke song at the end with Coltrane.
I don't think General Rom knows your name, though. I think he just considers you a filthy human.
That's what makes it ironic.
I'm glad you came.
How about Three's Company?
Yes.
Well, yeah. It is you, Dom, and him.
Yep. Actually, maybe just the Seinfeld opening sting over and over.
How about Annie?
That should be the bonk soundtrack. The Seinfeld opening should be the bonk soundtrack.
Yeah, probably true.
Just that over and over again.
It would be really cool if somebody hacked Super Mario Galaxy to replace all of the Mario wahoo yippies with just boom 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 sounds. Yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
And randomly the screen from that prototype Mario 64 video.
Hey Porter, if you're watching this, put some of those in the video ball. Let's just make it so every time you spike a ball, it makes a different. Seinfeld.
Yeah, put in Seinfeld mode in video.
I would love for Princess Peach to just be voiced by Seinfeld.
Yeah.
What's the deal with jumping?
Anyway, the actual answer for the final encounter in Gears of War, in all seriousness, is Jingle Bells with Cats.
Jingle Cats.
I would think
Carol of the Bells with Cats.
Oh, that's really good.
Meow, meow, meow.
Yeah, I think that would be a better ending than.
Yeah, that would be hot and fresh.
Someone's done that, right?
That'd be hot and ready.
Okay. Hot and ready.
H&R.
I think that's Gears of War. This is a great segment, guys. I think we'll do it again. What is. Yeah.
I know what it is.
Go check those out, listeners. Our next topic, what is the most independent video game?
The most independent video game.
This sounds like a pretty funny like movie plot, like a short film.
The most independent video.
The search for the most independent video game.
That's an indie game the movie should have been about.
Indie game the movie.
You showed your brother not independent enough. His opinion changed the outcome of the game.
So we have to figure out like what we mean by indie, I guess, but I'm just going to throw this one out there.
It's not indie, it's independent.
Okay, independent. Well, still, I'm going to throw this out there. I guess if it's not indie, then that's different. But I'm going to say this one anyway, just because.
Yeah.
There was that game that fella made that had only 1,000 lives, and you could gain lives as well, but you could lose them, and there were only 1,000 lives, and after those were gone, the game would end forever, and it would destroy the source code of itself, and it would just be gone.
Glitch Hiker?
Is that what it was called?
Yeah. I know that game.
Yeah, that game. So that game was... In the indie spirit, that was, it had the right amount of pretentiousness. It had a cool idea that it actually executed well, and it was like a concept, and it was an art thing, and it did what it was supposed to do, and like the last guy playing was just desperate to keep the game alive, and it was that's interesting. So there.
That is the most indie game potentially.
Yeah. Potentially.
Most independent would have to be something made entirely by one person.
Yeah, exactly.
With, like, almost no input, if any.
Cave Story?
I would imagine Pixel probably, like, showed it to people and got feedback, you know? The most independent would have to not be that. It would have to be someone just in their room doing this with zero feedback.
We wouldn't know about it.
Right. Correct.
We would never have played it or heard of it, so it's very difficult to...
But there are games that exist that are playable that probably had zero eyes on them before going public.
Oh, so there's this one game that I'm thinking about that was some kind of thing with a frog. And the guy, he did have, I guess he had a little input, but it was like an Xbox Live indie game, and he had spent... like $50,000 of his own money making it. I don't say that. And then it was not very good, and it came out, and he was really upset that nobody liked it, and he'd spent all this money on it, and he said it was a completely original game that would change how you thought about games forever, and it was like, I think it was just Arkanoid with a frog or something. Something like yeah. that. But unfortunately, I can't remember all the details, but that was it was definitely an example of a game where nobody outside of his brain had been asked for any input on whether this should happen.
Yeah, that's pretty independent.
But in a way, like, Rage by id Software was pretty independent because, you know, they thought and said publicly that they had made the most amazing thing and they had done all these awesome innovations, but it seemed like nobody had actually asked them any questions or pushed back on anything because then it came out and everyone was like, lol. But it's that was made by a whole bunch of people, so it doesn't count.
I think when we're talking about independent, we're talking about that. I think Cave Story is a pretty good like jumping off point for saying this one guy came home from.
Hey,
work.
What about Kenta Cho's games?
Kenta Cho's games, yeah. Those are. I was gonna get to those. I think Cave Story's really cool because it was one guy working a job as a software engineer. And coming home every day and working on his game for like an hour and then going to bed, right, for 7 years. And then he released it and people freaked out. I feel like that's the definitive indie game. And that there's an indie game, the movie, and it's not about that makes it even more indie.
Indeed.
It makes it more indie indeed. It was so independent that indeed. It was basically his hobby, you know?
Yeah,
like it was not. He did
my
not
hobby.
Intend to make money at all. He was perfectly financially independent of his own game. That's how independent it was. It was just for fun, and it was also great, and people liked it. And I think it's one of the best games ever made. And there it is, you know. And I mean, maybe it's become un-indie in the last couple of years because they keep putting it on stuff.
Yeah, he sold out. Yeah,
I don't think he sold.
I don't actually think he sold out.
The word "sold out" is what he did, right? Like literally. But at the end of the day, what he did was years after releasing his game, decided to make games for a living and quit his job, right? That he went almost 10 years before quote unquote selling out is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Right. Literally, he did sell out because he was making $0 off his game, and then he decided to make money off of it years later. That's great to me. So that's cool. I would say Cave Story is the most independent video game because it's important and it's real. Also, Out of This World is a similar game that a dude made by himself, but he did make it for money. But
well,
he made it all by himself.
Well, didn't he kind of submit it to a publisher that gave him feedback?
He did. But you know how publishers were on Amiga.
Yeah,
in the
they're
early
like
90s.
They're
like,
crash.
Yeah, I can't get it to crash. I don't know what I'm doing. We'll put this on some discs.
We'll nail this to the wall. Which right. is
we'll buy,
what they
we'll buy
did.
Some discs for you.
They put in a bag and we really get to a wall.
We really gotta, actually the three of us, just sit down and familiarize ourselves with the Amiga. We gotta do it.
Oh, I've been doing that myself with Bennett Foddy was kind enough to make a list.
I wanted to see that list.
Of Amiga games that I should play.
I can list a few of those too, because my dad actually had an Amiga. I have some knowledge.
Oh, well, Bennett Foddy, as we may have known from the times he was on this podcast, which he berated us for not knowing the Amiga, in addition to playing all the TurboGrafx NES, Super NES games, he's also played basically hundreds upon hundreds of Amiga games. And he's like, I played this game for 12 hours once. It's really great. And it's like his idea of having played a game a little bit is, I played this for like 14 hours one day. It was pretty good. And it's like, so he wrote me a list of games that are still great right now that I should play.
Amiga.
And I've obtained all of them, and I've played some of them. And I mean to stream them, and then I just never stream them. But, some of those are pretty goddamn independent, I would say, because it's all just one dude making a game in his parents' attic in
England. Yeah, a bunch of those were.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Let's move on, shall we?
But yeah, I would say Cave Story is the better example.
Move.
Or what, why not Quap? Quap is a pretty good example of an independent game. It's got hundreds of millions of hits. Hundreds of millions of players.
It's a heck of players.
Yeah, it's like more than any kind
of game. He probably showed that to somebody, though, that Bennett Foddy.
He showed it to who?
To who?
But you don't think he showed it to anybody before he put that out there?
I mean, I think he just kind of flopped it out there.
I agree. Just walked away. Like, what feedback could he get? You know, like, it was just like it his was, wonderful idea that he executed.
Is this ridiculous enough?
He probably made it in like a day, right?
He was trying to make a game about running, and then he's just like, oh, this is hilarious, and then just put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which video game princess is most competent in governance and diplomacy?
That's a good question. Well, Princess Peach definitely has all of the assistance you would expect. She's even got like a guy with a little beard and a cane. You know, she's even got that guy. You need that guy.
A major
domo. You know, I'd say there are a lot of princesses like in Light Crusader, for example, princesses that you you pretty much just meet them, and they're like, yeah, you got to go do this stuff, and then that's it. Like, all they do is tell you what to do. So those ones are probably the ones that are best at governance and whatnot, because they're not captured, they're not away from their role, they're just doing their stuff.
So by default, a video game princess that can avoid being captured is probably best at actually being a princess.
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the princesses, well, they're captured, but the princesses at the end of the levels, the worlds in Super Mario 3D World, they're these little tiny pixie androgynous, feminine but slightly androgynous pixie things that are captured in bottles, and they're princesses with little crowns, and when you free them, they build you a tunnel to the next world. So they're good at public works projects.
That's true. All right.
And also Zelda in the Zelda games is usually pretty smart when she's disguised as another character. So when a Zelda game shows you a female character with the blonde hair, and her name isn't Zelda, she's probably Zelda. Right. But
spoilers.
Yeah, that's kind of a spoiler, but she's usually a pretty smart person. Like in Wind Waker, she's a pirate captain who's got like a crew of loyal pirates on her team.
They don't know she's a princess. And
she's not really governing very well if she's.
But she is though, because she's on a quest to save the world. So
she managed to
diplomat these. These pirates into helping her save the world without telling them that she's a princess. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
And then in Wind Waker, she's a hardcore kind of person fighting and killing people.
Yeah. And in Ocarina of Time, she's kind of looking through the window saying, "Yeah, that Ganondorf's up to something."
Or not in Wind Waker. Right. I meant in Ocarina of Time. She's the androgynous blonde-haired character that turns out to be a lady, and then as soon as she reveals herself as a lady, she gets kidnapped.
Right.
Because that's what happens.
As they do.
Not very good.
Yeah, it's not, but right up until then... Wow, I really messed up a word there. Right up until then, she's pretty cool.
Maybe that's trouble just thinking Zelda of a being lot of... trope savvy. She realizes that women in video games get kidnapped, so she pretends to be a guy, so she avoids it.
Best princess ever is the princess from Landstalker, Princess Lana.
Right.
Because she's really smart and cool.
Oh,
and,
Lana Stalker.
And she doesn't get stalked. Well, no, she's actually also the character from Lady Stalker. So.
Yeah.
And Lady Stalker is her and her cook and her her advisor going on a quest to save the world. And if you can get a cook and an advisor to help you save the world, you know, you're pretty good at diplomacy, I'd say.
That's princessing, yeah.
I'm having trouble thinking of princesses that are the kind that I was describing, which are just the ones that tell you what to do and keep the kingdom together. Because most of the time you meet a princess, she's either getting stolen or she's on your party, and she, you know, her dad doesn't want her to go, but she's like, I'm going to do this anyway because I'm my right. own lady.
Yeah.
I'm a princess.
Like Garnet in Final Fantasy IX, yeah.
And I'm having trouble thinking of a princess that isn't like that.
Princess that just does her darn job, right?
Yeah.
Right. That's what I want.
Yeah, the job princess, and that's what I'm trying to find here. Job princess.
Yeah, I like job princess.
Job princess is from Adventure Time, right? There's a job princess.
Yeah.
No, but I kind of think of Princess Bubblegum from Adventure Time as kind of the ur example of a
diplomatic.
Yeah,
she's a good princess.
I was going to say her, but it's cheating. There are games with her in it, but it doesn't really. It's cheating. So, you know, that is who I was going for in my brain as a good example of a princess who pretty much just holds it all down. She makes some mistakes sometimes, but she's got it under control overall.
Yeah.
But a video game equivalent, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can answer this question with a name. I might be stumped.
Well, then in that case, what kind of game would you like to see which incorporates a cool princess that does her princess job?
Some kind of... So there was a game that at one point I wanted to make, which was where you just have... You got a bunch of warriors, and you can send them down into dungeons, and they come back up and get you stuff, and you watch them quest, but you can't really help them, except you can drop them items or things like that at certain times. You've just got a whole bunch of dudes and ladies down there questing for you in these dungeons, and then you use that to build up your kingdom. And that would be like a princess in that role, being like, "Yeah, you guys go do this stuff," and then building up her kingdom with it. That would make sense to me, but maybe that's not so exciting.
No, that sounds like a good browser flash game or an.
Yeah, that's the kind that it was going to be.
Yeah. Let's move on to our final round. We're going to play title design, which is a thing where I give you the name of a pre-existing thing. And you have to design quickly come up with a game concept based on the name alone. This week we are doing Tom Hanks movies, where I will name a movie that Tom Hanks is in, and you have to
thanks.
Yes, mm-hmm. And you have to come up with a game based on that name. We shall begin with Castaway.
Castaway.
Well, You're a guy, and there's dudes who are just like throwing garbage at you, and you have to keep throwing it out of the area that you're in. So you have to cast the garbage away from yourself. Because the title of the movie Castaway is two words, not one word. So it's not about it's not necessarily about a guy who's trapped on an island. It's about I actually think Castaway is a good movie, and I've after seeing it once and then seeing it again several years later, I was like, wow. It's a good film.
That's pretty good. I was just going to say Lost in Blue, and that's your answer.
I was also thinking, I was going to say Survival Kids, but same thing.
Yeah. Throwing things, just getting them out of the place where you are. Mm. Pushing them.
Cloud Atlas.
Well, so it would be a That Game Company game, where you're manipulating clouds and you're trying to draw something.
Except you're not manipulating like clouds in the sky. You're manipulating Cloud from Final Fantasy.
And then you have to fight Genova at the end.
Yeah, right.
And he has a map, and that's the end.
Big.
Big is Super Mario Brothers, where every mushroom you get makes you twice as big, and eventually the camera just keeps panning out. Why can't they make a Mario like that, where every mushroom you get, the camera zooms out?
And the level is designed to
level. Like that. Yeah, the level is designed to have a whole bunch of different exits just based on the number of mushrooms you get.
That's really cool.
Nintendo.
The Green Mile.
Oh, the Green Mile. It's an endless runner.
Yeah.
And it's just green.
It's a
runner set on a golf course.
You know how Snoop Dogg really likes making those iPhone apps these days? So oh, it could be an endless runner with Snoop Dogg, and all the power-ups are weed.
And it takes place on a golf course. And it's not
mile.
Snoop Dogg, he's Snoopzilla now, okay? He changed his name. He is actually Snoopzilla.
I was thinking one of those launch games where you try to launch a thing as far as possible, but with a golf ball.
Mm. Like a stair dismount? Or not, wait. Yeah, one of those games?
Yeah.
Nautica Crash?
Nautica Crash.
The Terminal.
The Terminal? Oh, it's just about... it's a whole game. It's like a browser game that takes place... or not a browser game. It takes place inside of, like, a Mac terminal. Like the terminal console pop-up where you have to enter commands to try to hack, like, an imaginary computer.
That was the best part of the Matrix video game.
I was thinking something like our 24-hour game from earlier where you're playing from different Rashomon-style perspectives, but in an airline terminal. So someone working at the Cinnabon, someone who's a passenger visiting family, someone who's like a gate check person.
I had an idea once for a Shenmue set in an airport, and I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be this game.
I had a sort of similar idea to Tim's where you're basically just forced to play that mini game from the first BioShock.
Oh man, BioShock forever. More like it.
Which mini game was in the first BioShock?
There were these terminals.
The pipe dream one.
Yeah.
Oh, the hacking thing. Yeah.
Okay. It was really bad.
Yeah.
It's
like some student
hacking.
Steam packing.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia.
Yeah. Oh man, it's like a Grand Theft Auto, like a true crime. Streets of LA sort of game, except it's Philadelphia.
And you're playing as Tom Hanks.
And there's and you're Tom Hanks, but you have to become a boxer like Rocky.
And you have to and it turns out that you're one of the couple guys who are up to no good, making trouble in the neighborhood at the end.
Yes.
There you go.
Angels and demons.
Oh, well, this is a very simple game. This would just be like a cave shooting game where you choose to be an angel or a demon. And if you're an angel, you're shooting demons. If you're a demon, you're shooting angels. What? I mean, there you go.
And your ship is a sexy Tom Hanks.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. No matter
You've
what.
You've got mail.
You've got mail is a...
Oh, I've always wanted to make a game that like takes place on the old internet.
Yeah,
like
I was just gonna say,
but like the hacker games.
Yeah.
I still don't know what the game is, but like it would be that. It would be. It would be like a 640x480 AOL style browser.
AOL. It would just be like a mini AOL with like a world in it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I used to make like back on AOL in the days of AOL, the day AOL. I used to make a whole bunch of profiles, right? And I had a whole bunch of profiles, and all I did was just, like, chat with people and pretend to be somebody else. It was awesome. So it's like, why not make a game out of that? Have you played that Red Shirt game where you're a person on a space station, and it's like a fake... The game is its own self-contained Facebook browser that has all these... it just came out recently. It's pretty cool. I would like something like that for You've Got Mail, but my submission for this... is just a beat-em-up, just based on the game.
Tim, if your idea of a good time is pretending to be other people, I have no idea how you got into video games.
When you say beat-em-up based on the game, do you mean beat-em-up based on the movie You've Got Mail?
Beat-em-up based on the movie, yeah, where you're Tom Hanks, and you're just punching dudes in the street. And like, that's it.
You've Got Mail.
And the final boss is Meg Ryan.
You have to press up at computer terminals to like recharge yourself, and it says you're Rob Merrill, and then your health is full.
And then every email is like, I'm at the Empire State Building now, and you have to go there, and you just have to like keep going, and then you have to keep finding a computer, and then eventually like when you meet her at the end, you like she pulls out a knife, and it turns out she's a murderer, and she's like a Terminator, and you have to kill her, and then the real her appears. And she's like, yeah, you defeated my Terminator. Let's bone.
Yep.
That's the end of the game.
Well, after the credits, there's a secret ending of them like being really awkward in person.
In Central Park. I want to go ahead and say that I've watched the movie You've Got Mail about 10 times with 10 different people in Japan. So it's like they love that movie over there. The end.
Catch me if you can.
Catch me if you can.
Another runner.
It's another endless runner, but you're chasing somebody.
Yeah.
Actually, it would be pretty fun if it were like Sonic R.
Sonicker?
Yeah, Sonicker.
Sonicker. Hey, watch your language.
It's not on rails. You're running a track, and there's a bunch of secret stuff. I would play that.
All right.
Yeah, I'd play that. Splash! Oh, that's the one about the mermaid. You're just punching dudes underwater, and eventually you gotta punch a mermaid. It turns out she's a robot, and then she's like, "Thanks for killing my robot."
Unlike the other one, though, this one has an art style with giant heads. I want giant heads.
Yeah, okay. I think you've got male could have big heads.
Yeah.
The money pit.
Oh, the money pit is...
it's a Scrooge McDuck. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I just wanted to say, first of all, it's a AAA game.
Yeah, you never know when something funny is going to happen on this show.
Did something funny happen?
Yeah.
You'd never know it.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's comedy right there.
It's a console game we sell at Walmart.
Editor Blaine Brent's Splicein, Statler, and Waldorf laughing over there.
Yeah, that's good. I'd like that one.
Sure.
I'd like that one.
Okay. And our final is Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, it's a game where...
Oh, this sounds great. Wait, this is... Sorry.
That's our 24-hour game where you can't...
Yeah.
You have to play straight through. It's...
I see it as an RPG, like a 16-bit overhead RPG. I think I'm tapping into your homeless Japan RPG when I'm thinking that.
Oh yeah, that one's gonna be cool.
Yeah, but like I'm just visualizing that in Seattle because the homeless people in Seattle are very distinct and interesting. Versus
I was in the Seattle airport a couple weeks ago, and they have shirts that are like night shirts for women that say "Sleepless in Seattle" on them. I'm like, not even kidding.
That's
like that's
what
really
a lame souvenir.
So it's a game about nightmares. You have to navigate your nightmares that take place in the city of Seattle. They're surreal, and you can't sleep because of these nightmares. There you go.
That sounds pretty good.
That's all
I
got.
This has been episode 70 of the Insert Credit Podcast. We did 70 of these guys. Congratulations.
That's a lot of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wahoo!
That's a whole bunch.
It's
something to be proud of, I think.
Don't tell me what to do.
Okay.
Don't tell me what to proud of.
I want to thank Blaine Brown, our editor, for editing these every week.
Oh, B. Brown.
Good old Brain.
We're coming up on the end of the year, guys. So
brain blown.
Yeah.
Brain blown.
I've been calling that joke every week.
Frank, I've made that joke so many times. Did you never listen to that joke?
I guess not. No.
Frank, we've been making this joke for months. Okay. So it's the end of the year, guys.
Welcome to the podcast, Frank.
What I want you to do, guys at home, is I want you to email podcast@insertcredit.com. And send me in not only your votes for best game of all time, which I've been asking you to do for a while, but also send in your votes, now that a significant amount of time has passed, for game of the year. And
G-O-T-Y.
Our last podcast this year will be, stuff permitting, because these things sometimes get delayed. So tentatively, the last podcast this year will be us breaking down the best games this year based on your nominations. So send those in as much as you can, and pressure your friends who listen to the show to do the same. And if your friends don't listen to the show, make them listen to the show, and then
kill them.
Yes, and then kill them. And then it turns out they were the robot clones, and you can bone their actual friends because they were being...
And that's how you can have sex with all of your friends.
Yeah, that's the restaurant you can take
them to. Yeah.
Right. That cheat code's from Frank Zavaldi. How to bone your friends.
Friend boner!
Bone with friends.
You can go to podcast.insertcredit.com to check out our old podcast, or you can go to iTunes, leave us a review. You can go to facebook.com/ICEpodcast to catch up on the latest of what we're doing. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm @AlexJaffe. Brandon's @NecroSofty. Frank's @FrankZifaldi. Tim's @108. That is stuff you can do. Make sure you keep your eyes on the horizon for cool games like Gunsport and Video Ball, because those are games that our panel are working on and will be great.
Oh.
Or currently are great.
And when I have a game I can talk about, I'll do that.
Please do, Frank. I'm looking forward to your game.
Yeah.
I really want you to make a game, Frank. Okay. I want this to be the club of guys who make cool games and me.
All right, I'll do my best.
Wahoo!
Yeah, so until next week, folks, send in them votes, and we'll hang out again. I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm Frank Cifaldi. Hi. How are you
Tim
doing?
I'm Rogers.
Hi, Tim.
I'm Brandon Sheffield.
Hi.
And now you're playing with podcasts.
Podcast over, yeah!